This is Popular Front, a podcast focused on the niche details of modern warfare and underreported conflict with me, Jake Hanrahan. For this episode, we're speaking to analyst Lucas Weber. He's also the editor of the excellent militantwire.com. Check them out. We're going to be talking about the Taliban's ongoing battle against the Islamic State Khorasan province, which is essentially the wing of ISIS in Afghanistan. They've been causing a lot of problems for the Taliban. Specifically, recently, there's been a big bombing at a Shia mosque. ISIS-K, as they're also known as, have just bombed the Russian embassy. It's a big problem for the Taliban. If you like what we're doing, please support us at patreon.com/popularfront. I was thinking, firstly, before we go into why there's serious differences and whatever, you know, between Taliban and ISIS in Afghanistan. First of all, mate, we can talk about the recent attacks, because up until now, from what I understand, ISIS-K, as it's known in the Khorasan province, like ISIS Afghanistan, they've not been as much of a threat as they seem to be now to the Taliban and, you know, the people they kill. Maybe just go over for us, like, what has their recent activity been like?
I could provide some quick background to show the kind of rise, decline, and resurgence of it. The Islamic State Khorasan province, which is a kind of AFPAC branch of the Islamic State, it has its origins in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, in the general region in 2014, and officially 2015, when it was recognized by the Islamic State central leadership. And the emergence of this kind of AFPAC branch was, of course, inspired by the rapid rise of the Islamic State and the establishment of the caliphate in Iraq and Syria in 2014, and the kind of global momentum and the ideological spread emanating from this major event. So many view the Islamic State Khorasan province as an Afghan group, but there was a notable Pakistani element dating back to ISKP's early phase, including the Islamic State's kind of subsumption of defected Pakistani Taliban faction in late 2014. And eventually, the core of the group kind of shifted into Afghanistan, because the Pakistani military was launching intense operations against the Pakistani Taliban. And this also put pressure on other groups. So they shifted more so into Afghanistan, although they continue to operate in Pakistan. And so ISKP declared war on the Afghan Taliban by May 2015, when this kind of broader shift brought them into direct contact with the group in Afghanistan. So they started building up their media warfare campaign and their talking points and their narratives to kind of delegitimize and discredit the Taliban. So they accuse them of being a puppet of the Pakistani state, Iran, and of deviating from the true path of Islam. And so ISKP became more heavily Afghanistan-based, and the competition with and the hostilities towards the Taliban worsened and exacerbated. So then ISKP has, not only did it kind of consume elements of the Pakistani Taliban, but it also consumed part of the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan, or the IMU, which was allied with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. So this kind of added more expertise, seasoned fighters, media operatives, regional geographic and linguistic knowledge to the network. So it kind of got stronger and more dynamic. And ISKP increasingly became the target of American and Afghan forces while also having to fight the Taliban, who were becoming increasingly aggressive toward the Islamic State. So then there was kind of a decline and then a resurgence, which we're seeing now. And so ISKP gained momentum in, greater momentum in 2016, 2017, before it was degraded and faced a series of challenges and setbacks due to the ramped up pressure from operations by the U.S., Afghan forces, the Taliban, and other reasons as well. And so as a result, hundreds of ISKP forces were killed. Others were arrested and surrendered. Leadership figures were killed, and their territory was rolled back because they used to control territory. And so following this kind of general rise and decline from 2015 to 2019, the group found its legs again. This is what we're seeing now. So there was a resurgence in about the summer of 2020, and ISKP switched its strategy. This is a strategy we're seeing now where they place less focus on holding, seizing and holding territory, and they've instead focused their efforts on a sustained campaign of militant attacks, urban terrorism, guerrilla warfare, things like this. And before, to talk about the types of targets they've kind of been going after before the 2020 resurgence, they've hit soft targets like places of worship, public gatherings, Shia communities, Sufi communities. Yeah, and they've been doing this. They had a recent string of attacks in Kabul, actually, against Shia communities, and they've been targeting the Hazara community pretty aggressively. And so, basically, this momentum, the decline, and now we're seeing the resurgence, which eventually coincided with the Taliban takeover, and since then. Both the Taliban's position, they've kind of transitioned from a guerrilla force into a government, and now they have to do counterterrorism against ISKP. So this brings us into the current phase of the Islamic State versus the Taliban, which is very different.
Right, and what is it that they have, over the Taliban right now that they didn't have before, would you say? Is it because now the US have left, things are a lot more, I don't know, it's easier for them to move around or what?
Yeah, well, when the Taliban took over, ISKP actually scored a big win. They struck American forces, the great evil, which they see it as, and they gained global notoriety. And that was the August 2021 Kabul airport suicide bombing that caused hundreds of casualties. So what has happened, not only did they really gain global recognition and credibility through the Islamic State movement and heighten their status within this, with this attack, but following the Taliban's takeover, the group was able to its enemy set changed. So the group is able to concentrate most of its focus on one main enemy, as before it was fighting U.S. forces, the government at the time, the Taliban, things like this. The group has switched to zeroing in on the Taliban, and they can devote most of their effort to the Taliban, although they also fight the Pakistani government and they target vulnerable communities such as the Hazara, others, Shiites, Sikhs.
The Taliban also target them though, right?
They have a history of it, yeah. And there's some reports of oppressive acts, basically. Yeah. But back to your question, I think ISKP found opportunity in the kind of chaos, the collapse of the Afghan government and the Taliban's turbulent transition from a guerrilla force to a national governing body, which is very apparent. And so basically the Taliban's isolated and facing considerable economic issues, and they're overseeing a dire humanitarian crisis. So ISKP intensify their campaign to further undermine and delegitimize the Taliban as this is going on. So they're looking they find opportunity in crisis and chaos. And with the Taliban now having to put military, police, and other security forces in the field, there's a lot. It's a target-rich environment for ISKP when they're targeting the Taliban. And naturally, the last thing I say is that a much higher share of its attacks are targeting the Taliban now. And we are seeing that ISKP clearly has benefited from the lack of external counterterrorism efforts and exploited the Taliban's very limited security capacities and areas with weaker governance.
Right, and they've just claimed this attack on the Russian embassy, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is a significant attack. So successful attacks on foreign diplomatic missions, they're highly desired by military, guerrilla and terrorist groups, but they're quite rare in comparison. So the suicide bombing, an Islamic State operative, seems he approached the Russian embassy in Kabul and detonated. So this killed, the numbers are still kind of fluctuating, but it's reported that two diplomats or embassy personnel have been killed and at least four others. But this is a very big symbolic value for ISKP, and it's going to be a potent fodder for its propaganda. It's a serious blow to the Taliban's credibility. And ISKP in their attack claim, so they celebrated the attacker, they released this picture, and they also gloated about how they exposed the Taliban and how they were able to undermine the Taliban's promise, which has been made repeatedly and just recently, to provide security for foreign diplomats, foreign investors, which it desperately needs due to its economic crisis, and it's kind of a message to other foreign diplomatic missions, businesses or investors looking to get into the Afghan market. And it followed what was notable too is, like, when I was tracking their communications, ISKP's Telegram channels, things like this, their propaganda, they've been hostile to Russia for a long time, of course, but in the last few months, especially since the Taliban takeover, they've really intensified their hostile rhetoric aimed at Russia. And they have honed in on the Taliban's relations with Russia to discredit it. They're saying, how can a true representative of Islam deal in a friendly way with Russia, who has the history with the Soviet Union invading Russia, with the wars in Chechnya, its current brutal campaign in Syria, and its kind of crackdown on its oppression, imprisonment of Muslims at home, which ISKP accuses. And so this is big for the IS movement as a whole as well, because they consider Russia to be the leader of what they call the Crusader East. Mm. And it was interesting because in the Caliph's first speech following the official declaration of the Caliphate in 2014, he said there were two camps in the world. Like, he divided the world into two camps that were in violent opposition of each other, eternal enemies. And it was the Muslims and the Mujahideen versus the Jews, Crusaders, and their allies. And the latter was being led by two forces. That's America and Russia. And this designation of Russia as a top adversary by the Islamic State's sole authority and top figure, the Caliph, it would set the tone for the organization's media warfare against Russia for years to come. And this came on top of already a pretty expansive list of grievances of anti-Russian sentiments.
Right. I mean, not to certainly don't have to give it to ISIS, but in terms of what they've just been saying with this recent attack, they're kind of right, no? Like, they've kind of proven that the Taliban can't really keep people safe there in terms of keeping them safe from attacks from Islamic State, Khorasan province. Do you think that's accurate, or is it maybe a little overblown or what? Like, because to me, this looks like, I don't know, ISIS-K seems to have actually made a significant blow.
Yeah, well, essentially, they, like they said in their statement, and they made it clear that this is their strategy, they look to undermine confidence in the Taliban, regional confidence, and international confidence from governments, businesses, aid organizations who they've also threatened. They're creating a chill effect because they want to create a environment where the Taliban stays weak, and anything that would strengthen their position, like foreign investment, international aid, infrastructure development programs, they look to disrupt and prevent. So this is a way of doing this because it sends a message to everyone else. We are targeting international targets within Afghanistan. And in their propaganda, they're increasingly threatening attacks on Russia, China, Central Asian states, India, Pakistan, and basically saying if you work with the Taliban, you are, they're already an enemy, but you're going to become a higher priority and be targeted.
And what kind of capabilities have they got right now? Are they like really ramping up recruitment? You know, how's all that going?
Yeah. So there's this. When it comes to operations, they've stopped. Well, for the time being, they're not looking really to take territory. So they want to do hit and runs. They want to conduct urban terrorism operations. They want to conduct guerrilla warfare. But there is a push for building support, recruitment, fundraising that actually I have been studying and writing about. So what I see it as is ISKP, since the Taliban has taken over, they've expanded their vision. And now they're pursuing a campaign of regionalization and internationalization rather than just the regional and the local. So basically, they're looking to South Asia, Central Asia, and internationally. So when you look at South Asia, for instance, they've intensified its their media and communications campaign and outreach targeting the region. They want to build support, fundraise, recruit from new population segments, and improve recruiting within existing communities of interest. And they're also crowdsourcing, for instance. It shows how kind of clever they are and how innovative they are. They're crowdsourcing pro-ISKP propaganda creation and volunteer translations into more languages. So ISKP has pushed to broaden its appeal by publishing a greater volume of materials and a wider range of languages spoken throughout the region to expand their reach and their kind of readership within these communities that maybe they had troubles reaching before. So one tactic they used to do this, so they'll celebrate Indian ISKP suicide bombers, and they'll write profiles on them in their magazines. They'll glorify them so that their supporters in India know that ISKP, this is how they exalt people who sacrifice themselves for the cause, and it's your obligation to come here and do the same. And we see the same in Central Asia, where I've mostly been focusing recently. So basically, they've official. Interestingly, ISKP has its official designated branch media outlet has established an official Tajik and Uzbek media unit that is are specifically designed to reach these communities, tailor messaging to these communities, get translations to them, and they have open recruitment networks, which I have been monitoring, and it's pretty robust and extensive, and there seems to be quite a lot of interest in these channels to recruit. And we've actually seen when the Sikh temple was attacked in Kabul, it was interesting how they played it, because this was to get at some offensive comments, I guess, made by Indian politicians. So they were at the same time striking at India, and this shows their this internationalization of their scope. They're able to strike at a community that has ties to India, and then they celebrated the martyr who was Tajik. So then they used the martyr to appeal to the Tajiks by celebrating him and talking about him. And what they said about him was quite interesting. And this goes back to the recruitment thing. He was running a school of suicide bombers who one had conducted a large attack in Pakistan. Others have conducted attacks throughout Afghanistan. So we're really seeing this. They're going for maybe less or non-traditional markets more so, and they seem to be having some success with it.
What was so interesting about what they said about him?
Basically, they were talking about his devotion to the cause and how he made the ultimate sacrifice, and they actually talked about how he, for a time, took over the Tajik media network. So this confirmed officially for the first time that the Tajik media network that we have been tracking is an official ISKP. Well, I guess it's not official IS Central, but it's official to ISKP in their media apparatus. And so basically he was doing propaganda creation targeting Tajiks, and he also sacrificed himself for the general ISKP cause, and he was targeting a target that was designed to inflict damage on India and bring Indian pressure down on top of the Taliban to disrupt and undermine relations between these two, between the Taliban and India, and create problems.
Right. And what has the Taliban's response been to this? I've seen a few videos of them kind of doing raids, or, you know, some of them where they said there were raids. Some of them look legit. Some of them I felt like they were kind of put on maybe for the press. I'm not sure. But I've seen a few kind of, oh, we're going to be raiding like ISIS, Khorasan province people and stuff like that. What have they said in their press? Like, you know, what are they doing?
Yeah, so basically the Taliban is trying, they're getting, the international community, they're very bearish on the Taliban's ability to ensure security and stability and prevent Afghanistan from becoming a launchpad for international terrorist groups or for attacks against its neighbors, as as seen with the rocket attack in April targeting Uzbekistan and the rocket attack in May targeting Tajikistan. So the Taliban, they received a lot of bad press over this because they failed to protect their northern border. And neighboring states aren't happy, and other neighboring states that haven't been hit yet are increasingly concerned that they're next, especially since ISKP, before the rocket attacks, they were saying, we are going to target and we are going to attack the Central Asian states. And they were intensifying their rhetoric towards these states and recruiting within their countries and calling for individuals to launch attacks, things like this. So they created quite a mess in the north and a whole host of concerns for these countries. And then basically within the country, the Taliban wants to, they're doing a PR blitz against the Islamic State. So they're showing their counterterrorism raids. They look to be very crude. In one video, I saw them toss an explosive in the window of a building and it blew off the wall. It's kind of humorous, but odd. So they're being very heavy-handed, but it's still not compensating, and the limits of their ability to even protect their own capital are being exposed repeatedly by the Islamic State. And so this basically undermines their credibility and regional confidence in them, and international business confidence that they'd be able to protect their workers if they wanted to invest, things like this. So it's doing some damage.
Yeah. And what's the kind of reaction from the people in Afghanistan now against the Taliban, like specifically regarding the Islamic State Khorasan province threat? Is that a very serious thing for the people now? Or are they still, you know, more concerned about other things?
It's hard to say. I mean, compared to the other issues, the kind of mass humanitarian crisis and the deep economic troubles, they probably don't see that much ISKP violence day to day. And especially the violence has become more targeted towards vulnerable minority groups and security forces or diplomatic targets, things like this, instead of just mass violence against most civilians. There are some civilian groups they do target. So it's hard to say, though. You'd have to be on the ground and talk to them to see, because, you know, media coverage is quite it's well screened out of Afghanistan.
And where is all of this Islamic State Khorasan province violence mainly concentrated? Where's their main kind of areas of support and operation?
Right now, we're seeing a lot of attacks in Kabul. We're seeing some scattered attacks in the north. And we are seeing cells busted like throughout the country that will claim cells. So basically, scattered through, but there's a lot of action in Kabul lately.
What's the international community's kind of response to this? I know, you know, America can't really say a lot. They lost, you know, they're out now, but there's got to be some kind of response to this, especially now. I imagine that they've just bombed Russia. You know, I can't imagine, you know, that fucker Putin is going to just go, oh, that's fine. Like, you know, it's a big deal.
Yeah. I think there's it's difficult about how countries are going to approach the Taliban government, because like when we face reality, they're in power and you're gonna have to deal with them in some way, whether it's in a counterterrorism capacity or intelligence sharing, or depends what country you are. But basically, I think you're seeing some people divided up into, we want to help the Afghan people, but we don't really want to deal with the Taliban and give the impression that we're approving of their kind of you know, their stances on women's rights and things like this. So, and there's also talks going on about releasing funds to the Taliban. But there's, as we saw, Al-Qaeda's leader was just killed in the capital. So there's no way that the Taliban did not know about this. And there's been rumors of other drone strikes against Taliban or against Al-Qaeda figures. So they're still in the country. And we've seen the Turkestan Islamic Party. They went silent for a whole year. And then now they're releasing propaganda. Well, they went silent in Afghanistan for a year, and they've been releasing propaganda showing their leaders and fighters in Afghanistan, and they're related, they're linked to Al-Qaeda. They have dual members with Al-Qaeda. So the international terrorist groups are clearly there, and it's hard to deal in official capacity with the Taliban itself, knowing that they're still hosting and protecting these groups and lying about their presence as well.
Lying about it how?
So they'll deny the extent, or they'll deny the presence of Al-Qaeda or various other groups, basically. And we've seen, for instance, China put pressure on the Taliban about the Turkestan Islamic Party, and they reportedly moved them away from the border with China further into the heartland. And and we see that the Chinese pressure on the Taliban is definitely having an effect on the Turkestan Islamic Party's media output. So the Taliban's kind of trying to restrain these groups, but in some way, but not a way sufficient for most governments.
China has a very good relation, though, from what I understand, with the Taliban, or at least they were one of the first kind of delegates to go there after the US was pushed out. They're kind of more friendly than most people, no?
Yeah, China's taking, and I mean this in a neutral sense, but like a practical approach. So
yeah, I understand what you mean.
They see the Taliban is, they've won, they're the new government, they're probably going to be in power for the foreseeable future anyways. And and also as the kind of economic behemoth in the region, the Taliban looks to them for aid. They frequently meet with them to talk about investment and educational exchanges and infrastructure development. There was news today that they want to be brought into the Belt and Road Initiative and things like this. And what I found interesting is that as the Taliban pursues this, ISKP has zeroed in on this and used it as a very central propaganda talking point. So basically ISKP has become by far the most hawkish anti-China Islamic State branch, and they frequently threaten attacks on China and on its interests abroad. And part of this is due to the relations between the Taliban and China, which they frequently criticize. And it's been interesting because the Islamic State's anti-China propaganda narratives were kind of centralized in the Middle East in the mid 2010s, and then it kind of shifted eastward to South and Central Asia with ISKP, as the Taliban and China have increased their relations and become more close. So there was a surge of these anti-China narratives by ISKP after the Taliban took power and started talking to China. And basically they talk about China becoming an imperialist power in the region, or a colonial power in the region, and the Taliban are puppets of China. They're bought out by China, and they use this to also discredit them as a kind of bona fide religious movement. Rather, they they show them at, they portray them as corrupt and shameless and abandoning Uyghur Muslims, basically.
Mm. What other groups are attacking the Taliban right now?
There's the National Resistance Front. I have not been tracking them very closely, but and it's hard to receive good information on them. But yeah, I think that would be the second.
I saw some footage the other day, which was verified that they're doing like kind of drive-by shootings on Taliban and stuff like that. But it's certainly nowhere near the resistance that, you know, people kind of said was going to happen initially.
No, but I mean, I think if the security situation, the humanitarian situation, the economic problems, if these continue to worsen, I think you could see this fuel greater factional divides maybe within the Taliban, or you'll see new groups emerge, or the existing groups will become stronger as the kind of fault lines open up.
Yeah, but it will benefit the resistance against the Taliban, right? If Taliban is kind of getting hit from other directions, it's going to be good for them, even though obviously eventually they'll probably have to reckon with Islamic State, Khorasan province.
Yeah, and on the Taliban side, I think it's easier to unite when you have like what they see as an invader or occupier on your land. But once you've won, it's almost like the insurgency, the 20-year insurgency was the easy part. Now they have to become a government that functions, provides for the citizens, and has to maintain stability in the region. We're only a year in, and we see some pretty troubling signs and red flags of things to come in the forms of militancy and economic troubles, factionalism, things like this.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think the future going ahead is going to look like for the Taliban combating ISIS-K? Do you think this is going to get worse or what? Do you think they might end up getting a handle on it? To me, it doesn't look good for them.
No, they haven't shown any effectiveness in countering ISKP. And ISKP, they're not focusing on taking territory right now. So they're doing urban terrorism, guerrilla warfare, and they're working on their own timeline. So what you could see is them just continue to do, you know, suicide attacks, hit and runs, ambushes, things like this, and maybe wait for some kind of crisis or power vacuum to open up so that they can exploit. So I don't see any signs that this is getting better. The only thing that I really see in terms of the Taliban's counterterrorism success is probably on the intelligence side. Now, when I've been tracking ISKP communications, and in the last few weeks, there's been a marked increase in anxieties and concerns over infiltrators, spies, bad actors compromising their media and communications networks and even their operational networks on the ground, saying that, for instance, one of their propagandists and the people he was with were killed because a mole gave their position to the Taliban and they were raided. So now you see ISKP's official media organ and pro-ISKP groups, they're pushing, they want their followers to exercise better communications or better operational security and to be very careful about who they talk to and to keep their eyes open for suspicious actors. And when they identify someone they think is a spy, they plaster their name and their contact information all over these networks very quickly. And so this shows that it's hard to say if it's the Taliban, although they have said in at least one instance it was the Taliban that infiltrated. They also speak of foreign intelligence agents and things like this. So there is a lot of, it's not going totally to plan for ISKP. They're having their own issues.
And where are they getting their weapons from, their capabilities? Is it all leftover stuff, or is someone helping them? What's going on?
Yeah, this would be something to ask War Noir, but I think a lot of it is weapons that have been left over and just from regional black markets and things like this.
And in terms of the connection they have to, I guess, like regular ISIS, you know, the HQ, if you like, in Syria and Iraq, which obviously they're very okay. They're making some small inroads actually to kind of coming back, but they're nothing what they were. How you know, are they connected in any way, or is it just ideology?
The Islamic State central authority and media apparatus still exercises ties to its exercises some degree of control to its various branches, and then it kind of also allows them to localize a little bit to meet and excel in regional local conditions. Recently, for instance, we saw the Islamic State central authorities issue a kind of warning to ISKP because their media apparatus has grown so fast, and they've been their public, the volume of their publications has been so high that they said, make sure that you publish in line with our approved narrative. So this shows that they still see themselves and do have influence and some degree of control over ISKP.
Interesting. Okay, mate. You've been tracking a lot of this on your platform, Militant Wire, militantwire.com. I really fuck with it. I think it's very, very good. I think it's similar to what we do, but in like written form. I think it's great. Do you want to tell people a little bit about that? Like, you know, how did you guys start that? What is it?
Yeah. So, Tom Lord, who has been on your podcast, and he studies kind of Mediterranean, Balkan security. Him and War Noir, who's a weapons researcher, we had kind of like a group chat, and we talk about all kinds of different things, and we were all writing independently at the time, and this was a while back, and so we raised the idea that why don't we just start our own platform, and we'll kind of bring our readerships together and our networks together and things like this. And then other people started writing for us, and it's really developed organically and grown quite well in our first year. We're coming up on our first year at the end of this month. And yeah, so we're pretty happy with this, and we cover all kinds of, we like to cover all kinds of non-state actors and irregular warfare, things like this. So you can find all of this at militantwire.com. And we're on Twitter at militantwire.
All right, mate, thank you very much. If people want to follow your work, where can they do that?
They can find me at on Twitter at lucasadweber, and also on militantwire.com. I write a lot on there and on other outlets like Eurasianet and for the Jamestown Foundation.
All right, mate. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
That was analyst Lucas Weber talking about the Taliban versus Islamic State Khorasan Province, or ISKP. If you want to support us, if you like what we're doing, please do consider signing up to our Patreon. There's a lot of bonus content on there, bonus episodes, extra video content, access to the community Discord. There's a whole series on there, a video series kind of explaining what people have to do or what they should or shouldn't do if they want to be a war reporter or a reporter or whatever. Yeah, there's lots on there. patreon.com/popularfront. We are entirely independent, completely grassroots, so if you want to sign up there, we would much appreciate it. Thank you to our sponsors today. They are Oracle Coffee Shop in Portland, Oregon, USA. They're an independent coffee business selling only fair trade products. See them at 3875 Southwest Bond Avenue, 97239. Also, thank you to Grind Core House, a pair of independent coffee shops in Philadelphia, USA. One in South, one in West. Find them on socials at Grind Core House. Lastly, thank you to Propagandopolis, an outlet selling and writing about historical conflict propaganda from around the world. You can buy prints at propagandopolis.com. Use the promo code PopularFront10 for 10% off. Also, if you want to support Popular Front and look cool while you're doing it, go to popularfront.shop. We're selling t-shirts, the embroidered patch is back in stock, hats, all sorts of stuff there, coat, jumper, hoodie, everything. Cool designs as well. They're not some bullshit like, oh, let's just put the logo on everything, blah blah. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff there. We spend a lot of time making sure that the merch is cool and it looks good. Popularfront.shop. Also, the collectible audio cassette tape of Sam Black's music. This is music you're listening to right now. Sam Black does all of our music, or 99% of it. The collectible tape, it looks cool as fuck. It's out now. I think there's like 20 left or something. So if you want one, popularfront.shop, get it. We will not be doing a reprint or a rerun. If you're waiting for yours still, bear in mind from the UK, we have a strike, the postal worker strike, which I personally support. Good for them. But right now, it's making things a little bit harder to get anything in and out of the country. But yeah, it's coming. Don't worry, it's en route. If you want to follow us on social media, Instagram at popular.front, Twitter is at popularfront_, YouTube just /popularfront. We're on TikTok now at popular.front again there. TikTok is a fucking hell app, and we're just getting flagged every single day, but we've been putting up like clips on there from our docs. We're trying to kind of funnel people back to the YouTube, because we're being censored heavily on YouTube right now, because that's what YouTube does. It's awful, it's shitty. We're struggling to kind of match the momentum at which Popular Front is growing versus the monetary income that we can get, because we are independent, we don't accept corporate investment. It's hard to keep it up. So, you know, if you do want to support us, patreon.com/popularfront, we'd very much appreciate it. Thank you to Ian Froese, recently donated to us via popularfront.co/support. There's a kind of like a, you know, singular individual donation button there if you want to donate to us or whatever. Much appreciated if you do. Music in this episode, the intro was by Home, and the outro, as always, was by Sam Black. If you want to see Sam's music, go to samblackpf.com or look him up on Spotify. His artist name on there is Sam Black PF. We'll be adding a lot more of his music to there soon. I've just been like mad busy to do it, so yeah, we'll get that done soon. Thank you very much to our high tier Patreons. They are VS, Brian R, Even Pank, Bradley Hope, Wizard Actual, Claire Hoffbauer, Benjamin Topper, Chongus Bongwater, Elijah Finley, Siddhartha O, Cameron Collins, Q Loves Cake Farts, Nicholas Blomberg, Matthew Diffley, Jane Milichip, Claire, Liana, Sean, Christianovich, NTHG, Arturo Rafael Macias, Ethan Zwick, Champagne Anarchist, Lisa Middlefart, David McManus, Tom Petrie, James Leons, Lisa Milgram, Bradley Davies, No Dogs No Hamsters, Brendan Crave, B, Drift, RX, Tiki Lover, Cherry, Ben Marshall, Dallas Dunn, Shikhar Gupta, LD50 Seattle The Band, K Glitter Vulcan, Bethany Swoveland, Adam H, Derivative Fool, Bottle of Water, Larson 8669, Ivan Julian, I think it is, Bjorn Kirsten, Diamondstein, Michael O'Connor, Jack Doherty, Nicholas Butter, JD, Jav, Ian Froese, James Cully, Tynan Daly, Ethan, Shanklin the Painter, Fitzmadrid, Ed Coulthard, Mike Barone, Ben, Liam Williams, Degenerate Zero Alpha, Giorgio Arani, DR, Amy R, Rubicon, Frank Austin, Amelia Mee, Christina Ravetti, Freya Northman, Noah, Andrew Hurley, Avita Provost, Brian McLaughlin, Tom Lochrin, Young Wasabi, Tony Bin, Adam Bergsnyder, JL, Stephen Davila, Dan Dunham, Fletcher, Chad Walker, Diana Govanek, Lawrence Abrahams, Pete McCormick from What Bitcoin Did, Christopher Martin, Ryan Sandercock, and Moritz Zumbul. Thank you all so much. Really do appreciate all the support. If you want to support us again, patreon.com/popularfront, or go to popularfront.co/support. And if you want a list of all our links and everything, I've made popularfront.cc. It's essentially a redirect to the link tree, but yeah, you'll get it all there. Thanks for supporting.